The European Patent Office podcasts bring you an insight into the technology and innovation shaping the world.
Hello and welcome to this podcast from the European Patent Office. Augmented reality, as an interactive experience of a real-world environment, is something many of us may associate with video gaming or mobile computing. However, the guests of today's episode have actually taken AR technology to the surgery room. They've developed a software that overlays the existing video from a thoracoscopy tower with clinical information displayed in AR, thus helping surgeons with higher metric accuracy while solving problems of ergonomics and economics. The story of the Portuguese startup company Perceive3D is the story of a young technology company spinning out from one of the oldest universities in the world. Led by a dedicated university professor with a strong entrepreneurial spirit, the team set sails from Portugal to successfully compete with big multinational companies in the global market for medical imaging. Hi everyone, my name is Stephanie Weber. I'm a member of the European Intellectual Property Help Desk, and we've teamed up with the UPO to bring you a new series of case studies centered around successful technology transfer. And the case of Perceive3D is part of it. Perceive3D's story illustrates how patents did not only facilitate the technology transfer journey from the University of Coimbra, but also how they helped boost the young company's market success, also helping secure continuous investment during the long development and approval phases. As mentioned, the journey of Perceive3D is very much linked to an inventive and visionary professor at the University of Coimbra, Professor João Barreto, who is in fact one of the inventors, founders, and the CEO of Perceive3D, and also he's still a full university professor. So a lot of hats to wear. It's a pleasure to have you with us, João.
Well, Stephanie, thank you for having me and for the very nice flattering words.
You're welcome. And also joining us is José Ricardo Aguilar. He's the head of legal and IP of the Knowledge and Valorization Department of the Instituto Pedro Nunes, a private nonprofit association for the promotion of applied research, entrepreneurship, and incubation of tech-based startup companies. And José is the author of the case study. Welcome, José.
Hello, Stephanie. Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here and to share some thoughts with all of you. Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you here. So, João, maybe you could explain us a little bit more about the technology and what problem it actually solves and what kind of impact it has, not only on patients, but also on surgeons.
Basically, we started focusing in minimally invasive surgery, and in particular in arthroscopy. That's the name of minimally invasive surgery for orthopedics, and where the surgery is carried through small incisions instead of completely open the operating field. The surgeon does two small incisions, and one of the incisions serves to give access to a camera. And it's from this video that he gets the guidance to execute the procedure, like opening tunnels and things like this. And the issue is that they don't have an open view of what's going on, which means that they have to do the things trusting on their knowledge on the anatomy, on their experience, and so forth. So this makes that they have a very long learning curve in order to master the techniques. And even after all this experience, they make mistakes of clinical consequences. And what we came up was with building on augmented reality, come up with what's called a navigation system for arthroscopy, where in a way we use augmented reality to show what they cannot see directly in the videos. And with this technology based on augmented reality, we brought the GPS to arthroscopy, which was something that didn't exist before. And the benefits is this. So we decrease the learning curves and we minimize the chances of errors. And since we built this technology based in video, then this also brought advantages for navigating in open surgery. So in open surgery, we already had GPS, so to say, but the technology would rely in specialized equipment that it's expensive and so forth. And now videos, you have video cameras everywhere. So we leverage on that and also brought solutions for navigation in open surgery.
Yeah, that's really fascinating to hear. And I think also because you sort of on one hand improved, of course, the quality of the surgery, but as you mentioned, it's also a very cost-effective solution as well at the same time.
Like GPS. That's our ambition, is to bring to surgery GPS in the concept that we see it everywhere. It's ubiquitous, and then you can build in the future new applications, new services on this surgical navigation surgery. That's the long-term vision.
And José, to bring you in into this conversation, I mean, you've been part of that journey quite a while. Maybe you could just, you know, take us back a little and recap how it all started and what was the role, let's say, of the University of Coimbra in that? Well, apart, of course, from this great invention.
This case of Perceived 3D is the real and the effective case of a real spin-off company. So, in fact, this is knowledge and R&D which was born in the laboratories, in the science faculty, and was brought to a company. And all the track was closely followed by the University Technology Transfer Office in that time. And then it was transferred to our business incubator. So this is one of the most remarkable cases of a spin-off company, of a real spin-off company. Nowadays, it's already an established company, but arising from basic research up to this point, and the university for sure had a very important role in this, in all these efforts of not only protecting, but also in the valorization of all these results and to the point that we are here today.
Yeah, maybe we can start here. So we heard that, Joao, you are a full university professor, but you're wearing many hats nowadays, and you seem to be someone with a very entrepreneurial and business mindset. So you're not only a professor, but from the very beginning, what was your vision, and why did you start sort of patenting or going into this sort of sphere of commercializing your invention?
So I lived in US for some time. I think that I got this ambition of building a company one day over there, and when I joined the University of Coimbra as a professor. So I started looking to the programs in entrepreneurship and intellectual property. I attended some, and that ended up, in addition to my activity as an academic, and that ended up being important in the sense that that's where I got a very clear awareness of the importance of patenting in the domain that I was stepping in healthcare. And we can eventually elaborate a bit later, that's essential in healthcare, the part of protection of IP. And I also learned kind of the technicalities behind it. So I had the team of intellectual property, you know, saying, before you publish the papers, please contact us, and so forth. So I followed those practices. And then this proved to be essential along the path of launching the company and raising capital, and later engaging customers and clients because of this important role of patents in the healthcare domain.
Yeah, maybe you could tell us a little bit more about that, because that would have been my next question about the patent strategy and also the business model behind Perceived 3D. What would you say are the cornerstones and the pillars of that?
So, okay, first about the patent strategy. So we really created technology from scratch. There's a number of enabling building blocks on our technology that we started protecting, and we had to conciliate this with budget aspects as a young startup. So we followed the philosophy of not really patenting the applications, but the core technology. And some crucial stones that we find as technologists that would block the access or would be, protect or difficulty the access of the technology by a competitor. So when we did the balance between going through the protection of these building blocks and budget of not maximizing the number of patents and the ones that we would do right, properly and carefully. So that's in broad terms the philosophy that we followed. And that proved to be effective, because then we went to the market where you really have big players. We work for them, so our business model in a way is that we provide services in a way, and we license technology for specific applications, as well as we produce our own products. And okay, this protection, the barriers that we created seem to be so far sufficient to keep us going.
So you have this dual business strategy, and as you mentioned, you had to go international from day one. José, you as an IP expert, what's your opinion? Do you have anything to add? What is special about the journey and the steps that perceived 3D took? And how did also, you know, you and your institution help to, you know, set them on the right path?
There's a very particular note that I would like to stress about the case of Perceived 3D was the involvement of Jean Barreto and his team in drafting of especially of the next patents, especially not only the first one, but also all the remaining patents that are now part of the portfolio, which is used by the company. And this is a message that we normally deliver to our entrepreneurs, to the people that are launching new businesses, especially those that are clearly based on high technology, that they need to involve in the process. And as long as they are clearly motivated to draft the first version of the patent specifications, of course, then to be revised by patent attorneys and so on, that's for sure. This point of involving the team, the research team, in drafting the patents is a kind of a school, is a kind of a trend for them for the next patents to be drafted, for the next cases. They will much more prepared to tackle that challenge of drafting the next patent. So this is one of the key messages and one of the strongest points of this case is this intense involvement of the team in the drafting of the patent application.
And maybe you could tell us also a little bit more, I mean, how have you been supporting the team? I know that there is a strong IP policy at the University of Coimbra as well. You just mentioned that sort of involving everyone and especially the researchers as part of that. Maybe you could elaborate a little bit more about that.
The University of Coimbra has a technology transfer office, nowadays called UC Business, which helps entrepreneurs arising from the university to develop their cases, especially with regard to licensing terms of those technologies based on the IP regulation. And then we have this idea of an innovation ecosystem back here in the center region of Coimbra. So combining all this policy together with our business incubator at Instituto Pedro Nunes, where we can host these cases and help them to thrive in the market and to become a successful company. So in fact, there's a first stage which is dealt by the university through the technology transfer office. So negotiating directly with the promoters the licensing terms of those technologies. And then these companies, this spin-off company and all of the companies which are in this ecosystem can apply for incubation near Instituto Pedro Nunes and then to carry on with the process and to turn into a company, a proper company in the market. And then benefiting also from some support with regard to these matters, IP and so on.
Yeah, and maybe Joao, you mentioned that already. I mean, the sort of, well, I wouldn't say the transition because you are in fact both. You are a professor and you are an entrepreneur. But from your perspective, how did you experience this innovation support system that José just mentioned? Was that something that sort of helped you in sort of, you know, at least getting familiar with this new role? And how did you experience that? And what would, you know, would you say are perhaps the biggest challenges up to today that you face in sort of balancing, you know, both roles?
So, and I'm not saying this because José is in here representing IPN, so because he knows me, so when I have to complain, I complain. But it's really, the ecosystem in here with IPN, so the Institute, University, and then the incubator works extremely well, I would say. Not only on this formal aspect, or formal, or if you want to say technical aspects, as I told you, the thing I got awareness for the patent issue in the sessions that were promoted by IPN when, as an academic, then there is a work that it's made together with entrepreneurs for spinning off and an effort to raise awareness for the investors, introductions, and so forth. But there is also a very strong feeling of community, even in a bad moment. So with the team of IPN, we also have the catharsis group when business doesn't go well and you go to cry and there is someone sympathetic on the other side that said, you know, I can try to help and do whatever. And sometimes it's very hard to do. And then the team, it's really very dedicated. And I think that I feel this and most entrepreneurs in here feel that, have this feeling. For the team of IPN and the promotion, and that many times they do the extra mile just for no reason, just because they want to do the job right. And you know, they should be acknowledged for the several cases of success that exist in here in the incubator. You know, even cases that in volume are substantially bigger than P3D. So there are unicorns in here and so forth. Mm-hmm. And this credit should be given. So this is kind of, so I tapped in the back and it's well deserved of the incubator and I really mean it. Going to your second point, it's about combining being an entrepreneur, right, and an academic professor, if I got right.
How does that feel?
Well, it gives a lot of work, right, yeah. I have to say. There are also good factors, of course. You are wearing two hats. Sometimes it's almost a bit schizophrenic, right, because you are, if you allow me to use this expression, because you are jumping between the two things, and there is this switch. But okay, I think that it's a delicate balance, but the thing worked once again by the collaboration with the university that always was very understanding, right? I would have to fulfill my obligations naturally, but there was a good support in here and the team, right? And one thing I think that the trick that, I think that there are two messages that are important that I feel. Number one, if you are an academic, you are creating a spin-off. There is often this view that you can transfer the business side to someone else. But if you don't have someone from business in your founding team, you really have to write the things and to get into the wheel and drive it, right? Because especially at the beginning, you are selling dreams. And when you are talking with investors and clients, they want to have the dreamer in the meeting room in one way or the other. And I think that's something that it's important. So this pushes you in the place that you have to have the two hats at least at the beginning when you go through these circumstances. And then you have to build a team that supports you, and you have to learn one thing that typically academics are not very good at, that it's to delegate. And that, for instance, for me at the beginning was difficult.
And maybe looking ahead and into the future, I mean, it's the beginning of a new year. So what's in for Perceive 3D? Where are you headed? Maybe you can give us a glimpse into your future plans, and also maybe refer to how your plans with the company are affected by the patent strategy. How do you decide how to move on also in that regard?
For the next year, what we are doing, so we have our licensings going on, so our customers, and we use these, our revenues, also together with investment to create our product that it's in the pipe. Okay, so that's the next step. Is for P3D to access the market, not through third parties, to create some technologies. So in terms of IP, so we will follow the policy that we have consistently followed in the last 5-6 years, right? So it's something that we create, and when there is a core building block that we think that we can protect, we invest in protecting it. So it's like building a house. So we are building a portfolio, you know, to delimit our territory. And at this point, so we started early with the first things in augmented reality. So 6-7 years ago, when nobody would talk about this in healthcare, it's a sector that naturally we are paying particular attention to in order to protect our space. So we'll keep on following this policy consistently. Patenting first in EPO, so in Europe, definitely. And also United States, it's the two geographies, and occasionally in Japan. That's the philosophy that we are following.
And maybe speaking of the IP strategy, José, now that the Uniparity patent will come, how will that affect the university's IP policy, you think? Maybe you could share some views and thoughts with us on this one.
Yes, the Uniparity patent for sure will be a great help for the protection of new technologies arising from the university. In that sense, all the businesses that will be built up on these technologies will for sure benefit from the system, not only due to all the budget advantages of the system, but also with regard to the wide coverage of these patents in the European level. So in that sense, it should be not only the direct advantage of all these cases being more prepared to be protected, because the need for funding for patents will be lower, but also all the aspects related with the coverage of these rights at European level. So this will strengthen the position of these technologies, not only in the basis, in the basic field, so in the university side, especially in those cases when the university is filing the patent applications as sole applicant, but also in a later stage when those technologies are being exploited by those spin-off companies that will acquire the license for the exploitation of those technologies. So in that sense, the unitary patent will for sure be a great help and a great advantage for the European players in the technology field.
Well, thank you so much. I'm looking at my clock, and time's been flying. Thank you so much for this inspiring and insightful conversation. To sum up, just a few points that sort of stuck with me throughout this conversation. So, first of all, as a starting point, IP awareness among researchers is an essential, let's say, basis for then all further developments. But I also understand that you need to have a very strong support network, and clearly, as you mentioned here in this case, a very dynamic and vibrant innovation landscape that actually helped you set sails and go that way, and combine the two roles of being a professor and then also entering into sort of the business and starting a spin-off. And then Joao, as you mentioned, with regard to the IP strategy, really sort of focus also on the core docs, which I find essential in this regard and very helpful to have a very focused IP strategy here, and also not be afraid to go international, and especially if you're targeting such a niche market. Is there anything that you would like to add, Joao, key learnings that you would like to share with our listeners, and then Jose as well?
Well, Stephanie, so in addition to the takeaway that I said of the importance of the entrepreneur, the academic, to embrace the business dimension. As I said, it's important that the dreamer to be on the meeting table with the investors and with the early customers. I think that there is also an important advice that I would give, that it's when you are in this situation and you are licensing IP created to the university, to have from the beginning a clear licensing terms, a clear licensing agreement with the university. Because as the life of the company evolves, there will be interests going on, there will be investors, new investors coming in, partners, and they will want to clearly see the separation between the university and the company. And this is something that at the beginning can be neglected with so many things that when you are building the company you have in mind. So it's important to enter, to sit down, to establish these terms earlier than later, right? Otherwise, things can easily become tangled, and that can be a difficulty for the business. And this is something that I also think that we did right from the beginning, and that proved to be very important.
Yeah, from my side, one key takeaway for an entrepreneur, for a tech-based entrepreneur, should be to be active on IP since day one. And there are plenty of things that people can do even without money, taking care about all the disinformation disclosures, looking for funding, and now we are increasingly having more and more incentives for the protection of IP. And bring IP as a part of your entrepreneurial strategy, and be prepared to answer to questions about IP, and to show, even though sometimes without funds, to show some strategy. So more structures or more simple strategy, but in any case, a strategy. And that's a very, very strong point that I would like to leave as a final word.
Yeah, and that's excellent. Thank you so much, Jose and Joao, for sharing this experience and recommendations with us. And it's with this these recommendations that this podcast comes to an end. If you would like to know more about the story of Perceive3D and the fascinating technology transfer behind it, or if you would like to indeed hear others or look into detail or look at other case studies, then please visit epo.org/case studies. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, which we hope, of course, you did, then check out more EPO podcasts based on the other case studies, which will come out later. But for today, thanks for listening, and we hope You'll be back soon for another Talk Innovation podcast. Goodbye.
Obrigado e até breve.
Adeus e até breve e obrigado.
Subscribe to the European Patent Office's podcast channel, Talk Innovation, at epo.org or on your favorite podcast platform. Let's Talk Innovation.